Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter. At 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. 2018 is almost the year that was filled with volatile politics, social upheaval, and uncertainty about what's ahead. Tonight, the Reporters Roundtable takes a look back. My guests are Hamil Harris, reporter with the Washington Informer, Nicole Green, Democratic strategist and third vice chair of the Maryland Democratic Party, and Justin Duckham, reporter with Talk Media News. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Hey, everybody. Happy New Year.
Hey.
Merry Christmas and Happy Kwanzaa. All of that stuff. We are going to start with the president and the government shutdown. This is what he has said about it most recently.
Whatever it takes. I mean, we're going to have a wall. We're going to have safety. We need safety for our country.
That is President Trump just back from his first visit to troops abroad in Iraq. But he's talking about the wall and border security and this battle between the president and the Congress. Ladies first. Nicole, where are we?
We are in the shutdown, and there is no hope in sight, unfortunately, of this thing ending anytime soon. The president has dug his heels in. The Democrats have dug their heels in, and I think this is going to go for probably, I would say, at least 20 days before anyone moves on this, unfortunately. I mean, the Democrats have stated that they're willing to give him funding for improved technology for the customs and border officers, for additional resources, for additional manpower, but they are not going to give him anything, I think, above 1.3 for the wall, even though he's requesting 5. And so that's where we are. I mean, he had control of the House and the Senate. I don't understand why he couldn't get what he wanted when there was full Republican control in Congress. But yet, he's going to try to blame the Democrats when technically it's still his party in office right now for the next couple of days.
Short Senate session today, Justin. 4 minutes. Wow.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and again, this is something that Trump had previously said he was going to own. During that Oval Office face-off between Pelosi and Schumer and him, he flat out said that he was not going to be blaming Democrats for this, that he would be proud to shut down the government, and now he is certainly trying to shift the blame. And what's really worth noting is that this is something that never needed to happen. Congress was poised to pass a continuing resolution to keep the government open through February. This was something that the Senate agreed to. The House was ready to take it up. The White House was indicating he was about ready to sign it, but then suddenly he lost support from a number of conservative pundits who said mean things about him, and now we're dealing with a significant portion, 75% of the government, in the now being shut down. So that's where we stand now.
Who's in charge? Rush Limbaugh, Laura Ingraham, whatever. But the bottom line is people in the nation's capital and as well as the rest of the country, they think everybody in D.C. is the government, but most of the people beyond the nation's capital work for the federal government. And these are people who are suffering. People from the Homeland Security Agency, the very agency that's charged with protecting this country, people are not making it. And I really don't think Trump is going to care. I don't see this moving for a long time.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about 2018, the year that almost was, as we take a look back at the top stories of the year. This isn't so much about the government shutdown as it really is about what a way to end the year for the Trump administration. Let's go back. We've had the Mueller investigation that one could argue may be coming to a close. We've had Stormy Daniels all year. That situation may have fallen flat, so to speak. We've had Michael Cohen turning on him and so much going on. Arguably one of the most tumultuous years in the modern presidency since Richard Nixon.
Yeah, I mean, I think also, too, part of the shutdown is to deflect from what is going on in terms of the Mueller investigation and what's going on in terms of Michael Cohen and what he's being provided, what he's providing currently to the Department of Justice in the Southern District of New York. Trump has done this time and time again. Whenever the pressure is on him, whenever the heat is on him, he does some other crazy outlandish thing to try to deflect the news media from really covering what the true story is. And the true story has to do with the Mueller investigation and whether or not he colluded with Russia in order to win the election in 2016.
Yeah. And as weird as this year has been, you really have to take into account that it's going to get even stranger next year. When the president is cornered, he certainly acts out, and he is going to be cornered from three different avenues. Democrats are going to be taking over the House. They're going to have oversight in the gavel. We have Mueller continuing his investigation, and we also have the Southern District of New York in regard to Cohen and everything out there, which is really setting up a house of cards that could collapse at any moment.
So, and here's the other piece, too, because there were so many things happening. We've had these the president's confrontation with reporters. We've had Omarosa, getting fired. We've had this cabinet takeover, and the president continually insisting that people leave. Okay, yes, we certainly do know that, and that things are running smoothly. One could argue not so much.
But you know, I will never forget, this was the year that President George Bush, Herbert Walker, we said goodbye to.
We're going to get to that in a minute, but let's talk about where we are.
The office of president, the decorum of the nation's capital, all that's gone. This is the biggest reality, titillating, crazy soap opera I've ever seen in my adult life as a journalist. Is that what America's come to?
One could argue that is the case. But one of the other things that we saw when it comes to politics was the elections in Georgia and Florida. Stacey Abrams giving her not so concession speech here.
Citizens tried to exercise their constitutional rights and were still denied the ability to elect their leaders. Under the watch of the now former Secretary of State, democracy failed Georgia.
Did democracy fail Georgia and Florida?
I think you can sort of make the argument it did. There were definitely some voting irregularities going on in Georgia. You know, I think that, you know, that's something the Georgia State House is going to have to work on. But the person who's running for governor should not also be in charge of running the election. And so it just, even if nothing went wrong, it just smells bad. It looks bad. And, you know, the rumor is that Stacey's going to run again, whether she runs for Senate or governor again in 4 years, who knows. But she made it very clear she is not going anywhere anytime soon.
Yeah, that we often talk about the blue wave, but that blue wave didn't happen in Georgia, didn't happen in Florida,
but didn't happen.
It, the House, yes, but for the governor's offices, didn't happen.
But the wave,
and it didn't happen in Maryland either.
But the reason why there is a wave, we're looking at part of the wave. Our third chair of third vice president.
Yeah.
Look at Stacey. Look at even the Kavanaugh hearing. All these things. We saw women coming forward, speaking strongly. It's so close. This is the beginning of the end of the Jeff Sessions, that group, you know, the old guard. They're on their way out. And so you have these young millennials who are very engaged, and as you say, are not going anywhere.
And it's also worth noting that the president really hit the campaign trail hard in 2018. He made this his pretty much sole reason for being in existence and being the figurehead of the party. He made 90 campaign stops during the 2018 campaign cycle. That is ridiculous. that is outrageous, and it really shows that this was a referendum on him. So while we may not have had the, you know, massive blue wave that took back the Senate, this was still impressive and still was a black eye on the president who went all in.
But this is Senator Tim Kaine after he won re-election this year.
It's more than about a blue wave. What this country needs in 2018 is a wave of compassion, a wave of character, a wave of decency, a wave of community, a wave of caring.
All right. Is he right? Is that part of the wave?
I think that compassion wave goes back to what Hillary Clinton did not do, because it's about people caring. And one thing that President Trump does, that regardless if you like him or not, he connects with his base. He connects with blue collar people who used to be Democrats, and people are locked in on him. Again, the Democratic Party has yet to have a group that's locked in and ready to go that really loves the Democrats, not just don't dislike Donald Trump.
202-319-7810. We're taking a look at the top stories of 2018 at the Reporters Roundtable. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. I want to go to really one of the most difficult stories of 2018. One could argue one of the more difficult stories for American history.
This whole two-week effort has been a calculated and orchestrated political hit, fueled with apparent pent-up anger about President Trump and the 2016 election.
Brett Kavanaugh, confirmed as an Associate Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, very, very difficult, confirmed by a margin of 50 to 48. You could argue that the vote was relatively smooth, but it was the allegations of sexual misconduct that were decades old. Was this just doomed to be a mess from the beginning?
I mean, this really caused a lot of high emotions during this period, and honestly, I think this might have cost us, the Democrats, the Senate, because prior to the Kavanaugh hearings, you really didn't have folks on the right really energized about kind of what was going on politically. And then, you know, when you speak about the end of the Jeff Sessions era, I think a lot of people kind of saw Kavanaugh figuratively representing their interests and kind of figuratively part of that old guard, you know, white men, you know, oh, woe is me. Heaven forbid somebody comes, you know, 20 years later accusing me of something, you know, and not taking into account that this has been going on for centuries in terms of men, you know, utilizing their sphere of influence and their power over women. And it just really reminded me, honestly, of the Clarence Thomas hearings, you know, literally 20 years ago. I mean, this definitely was a game changer, I think, in terms of the midterm elections this year, just how it evolved. And I don't think anyone honestly was expecting this when he was initially nominated. You know, most people thought the nomination would probably go smoothly with a couple of questions about his voting record, but no one had anticipated this, I don't think.
Well, no, and you had Lindsey Graham and you had Trump and you had Kavanaugh himself leaning into this idea that they have been destroying the reputation of a good man and that he's never going to be able to look his family in the face again. He's going to have a cloud over him on the Supreme Court that just never materialized and really showed that, you know, just by making somebody face allegations, that's not the issue at here. And, you know, those allegations, you know, are still serious. We've obviously had them dismissed in terms of a technicality. But ultimately, Kavanaugh is on the Supreme Court. He was applauded recently by the Federalist Society, and he has now become a pretty much conservative icon in a lot of circles. So it really showed how hollow that notion of his reputation being destroyed irreparably really was.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're taking a look at the top stories of April. Calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling, April. What's on your mind?
Hi, what's going on? You know, I agree with everything that is that has been said. I think what bothers me the most and what's most disappointing is that this little boy in this man's body is truly making a mockery of this country. And it's so obvious. Why isn't something being done? He surrounds himself with people who we hope is like him. And when he finds out they're not, they all disappear. He keeps... I don't get it. I don't understand why he needs to go. He's crazy.
Thank you, Amy. Thank you, April. Anybody want to comment on what April is saying?
The biggest issue, though, is either pro-Trump or against Trump, but it's all Trump. The problem is America needs to fall in love with another leader just to give an alternative. But right now, it's like either you're with him or you're not, and that's the only thing in the room at the table.
Yeah, his ego can't take anything different.
And I think that's a really, really interesting point. But and there was something that I mentioned before, and I don't, before I go to a break, we've got to talk about this. The race for Maryland governor, Ben Jealous, Larry Hogan. Did Ben Jealous have a chance?
No. The bottom line is he polled, as we talked earlier, he polled 16 to 20% behind. The whole race never caught up. The issue, what the big story was, how Larry Hogan was able to define himself beyond Trump. He was a Republican. This race was not even national. It was almost like, well, that doesn't count. He's not like a regular Republican. And they went, it was like amnesia, and the Democratic Party in the state 2-1 did not raise the level to connect Hogan with Trump.
But how could you connect with?
Because
we're not talking. We're not talking about a Georgia Republican. We're not talking about a Florida Republican, Mississippi, Alabama. We're talking about a Maryland Republican. And suffice it to say that most Maryland Republicans that are running for statewide office are not red. They're purple. And so you can't connect someone who
the
is
purple wasn't on the ballot. It was either red or blue.
But you can't connect Larry Hogan to the new president that he has.
Why can't you?
Because
why?
He constantly publicly denounced him. We're going to take a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Stay with us. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Bobby calling from D.C. We're going to talk to you next. Lines are still open. We're taking a look at the stories, the top stories of 2018. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. Lines are still open. We'll talk more about this on Sirius XM Channel 141.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we're at the Reporters Roundtable taking a look back at the top stories of 2018. My guests are Hamil Harris, reporter with the Washington Informer, Nicole Williams, Democratic strategist and third vice chair with the Maryland Democratic Party, and Justin Duckham, reporter with Talk Media News. Lines are open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Chris, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Chris. What's on your mind?
I'm just curious to know what are we, I mean, you all keep talking about Democrat, Republicans. What about the security of this nation as a whole? Not Republicans, not Democrats. We have leaders. We have our FBI, our foreign intelligence saying this guy is saying another. I mean, at some point in time, we got to put aside if you a Democrat, if you're Republican. What about the safety of this nation?
Okay, what specifically are you talking about, Chris, as it relates to the safety
I'm
of this nation? Can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go right ahead, please.
Okay, so they're saying all of the powers to be, all of the intel, that's what they do. all day, every day. But, okay, he's in office now, but we have all of our top leaders, all of our intel, saying one thing, and he's saying another. Okay, we have our top generals and top Pentagon officials are leaving because they don't agree with this guy. And all we keep saying about Republicans and Democrats, at some point in time, this country is going to be weakened because of this mockery that's going on.
Well, you know, I think you make a really excellent point, because one could argue that there was a point in American politics when we had people like John McCain, George Herbert Walker Bush, George W. Bush. You could even argue under Ronald Reagan, Jimmy Carter, and the like, that we always knew that Russia, and in some cases, depending on how far you go back, the Soviet Union was the enemy of America. And now we've got this headbutting between the president and those that are supporting him and those that are not really supporting him, but in his same party. And then you've got the Democrats. Nicole, help Chris out with this one. Chris, thank you so much.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard when we have a president that isn't willing to listen to people who, you know, his advisors. These are individuals who have been in the CIA and the FBI for years and years and years. This is their job. This is what they're trained to do. And to not heed their advice. I mean, the only thing we can do, I mean, there's not much that we can do except vote him out. I mean, why he doesn't want to listen to them is because, you know, he's too busy listening to Fox and Friends. And so that's where he's getting his foreign policy information from.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
I mean, the issue is we've relied on a lot of norms and a lot of pretty much basic notions of government with checks and balances to try to ensure that certain things like what we're seeing just wouldn't happen. And it turns out that those systems just clearly aren't strong enough. There's supposed to be this notion that you don't hire your children to serve in government if you're the president. There's supposed to be notions that you don't have a bunch of acting secretaries who aren't confirmed by the Senate. And we're seeing basically a breakdown of the basic protections that we see in the democratic system that really need to be revisited as soon as possible, and hopefully before he leaves office.
As they were saying, sports by the numbers. Democrats, 60 vote, remember that, the break of filibuster culture. Trump doesn't have that. In the House, the Democrats coming in the Senate, 54 senators. It's by the numbers. That's where the power is. So therefore, we're halftime. We're about to see a new game. They're letting the second half, and let's see how messed up it's going to be, because it's going to be a divided government for the next 2 years.
One of the other horrible and difficult things that we saw in 2018 was the peripheralization of mass shootings.
Oh my God!
That is a piece of sound that we heard so much this year from inside Parkland High School in Florida. It was once a high school, once again, the scene of a deadly mass shooting. 17 people killed on Valentine's Day of this year. Gunman Nicholas Cruz, who was a former student at that school, used an AR-15 style assault rifle to gun down 14 students, 3 staff members. And then after that, we heard this.
I pray that you sign the No NRA Money Pledge. And should you continue to choose your wallets over our lives, I pray you enjoy retirement. Because we will vote you out.
That was during the March for Our Lives, about a month later, after the Parkland High School shooting. But this year, and this is just a handful of the shootings. Santa Fe High School in Texas, 10 killed. The Capital Gazette murder in Annapolis, 5 killed. The Pittsburgh synagogue mass shooting, 11 people killed. The Thousand Oaks, California bar shooting, 12 people killed. And yet the only thing that we have seen by way of movement is the elimination of bump stocks after the Las Vegas shooting last year. It took a year for that. Where are we with this? Are we just are we numb to this, Nicole?
We're numb to this. We are the laughingstock of the industrialized world. Nothing's going to change, especially with the change in Congress. I mean, I think Camille's correct in that we're going to have, you know, a divided government come January. And so nothing's going to get done because there's too many folks in Congress who are not going to, you know, exercise the moral fortitude necessary to do what needs to be done. They're so busy worrying about reelection. They're so busy worrying about those campaign donations from the NRA that they know what the right thing is going to do, but just refuse to do it.
I'm optimistic. And it's interesting. When you mentioned the name of the shooter, I sort of did a double take just because I basically forgot his name. And what's weird is I can remember just off the top of my head the name of the activist from Parkland. I know David Hogg. I know Emma Gonzalez. Those are household names now. And I can't remember a modern shooting in recent memory where I remember the victims' names more than the perpetrator. So it showed that they really took the mantle for this. They occupied the public imagination for a good period of time. Usually when we have mass shootings, we move on after a month. They carried on with the March for Life. They're continuing to push this issue publicly. And that's something that we just haven't seen post-Columbine, post-Virginia Tech, and after everything else we've seen.
But when do we go beyond a speech? I mean, I look at Florida. Okay, at the end of the day, Florida lost its Democratic senator and got a Republican governor that went in Texas. Ted Cruz won. In the state of Maryland, again, Ben Jealous talked about criminal justice reform. Hogan won. And so at the end of the day, nothing changed. There were very passionate speeches, but nothing changed. And the only thing that's interesting, the powerful NRA was infused by this Russian operative that we're still trying to figure out what's going to really go down. So again, you really wonder how much influence do the Russians really have with American politics?
Interesting point. Moving on to yet another fascinating, incredible story this year. When you talk about a fall from grace.
Mr. Cosby clearly has been denied his right to a fair trial. These injustices must be corrected immediately.
Bill Cosby, comedy icon, philanthropist, and on and on and on, sentenced to 3 to 10 years in prison for being convicted back in April for sexual assault. Those charges stemming from allegations brought by former Temple University staffer Andrea Constand. She claimed Cosby drugged and assaulted her back in 2004. But it doesn't start with Bill Cosby. And I think it's, This isn't just about men behaving badly. This is about men behaving horribly. And Bill Cosby is a convicted felon. Leslie Moonves, who was the architect of so much success, not only at CBS News, but for the CBS media empire, kicked out unceremoniously and denied $120 million because of allegations of sexual misconduct. Matt Lauer, again, an icon for NBC News, also kicked out for sexual misconduct. This is Me Too on steroids, women finally speaking up, but there's still so much pain to go around.
There is. Like I said earlier, I mean, this has been going on for centuries. You know, men taking their power and abusing their power for their own personal gratification against women. And for so long, women have felt as if speaking up would not result in any type of change, which is why for so long you didn't have women speaking up, because the idea was, well, why should I? Nothing will change. You know, this is just the way men are. You know, when I was a little girl growing up, that's what you were taught, that this is just how men are. You just got to suck it up and deal with it. And now we're finally at a point, thank goodness, where it's like, no, this isn't right. And it was so powerful. I saw on social media the other day, Idris Elba said that if you haven't done anything wrong, then you shouldn't be afraid of the Me Too movement. And that's true. If you haven't been acting like a predator, then you have nothing to fear with all of this.
I totally agree, because not just did the Me Too movement stand up, America's standing up, a new generation is standing up. And again, Mr. Huxtable, you know, I thought it was more than 10 years, I guess 3 to 10. Again, he's gone. And I was the person that first covered Bill Cosby, interviewed him, the Washington Post, a lot of stories. And so, again, he's been called on the account and other people. So
it's a changing culture.
that was a pregnant pause.
I mean,
what do you say, right?
What do you say beyond the list?
Right.
Yeah, and you really do. But I don't think that it's going to end here.
Yeah.
I really, really don't. I think that you are going to have... you're going to have more women standing up. But like Justin just said, I think that we are going to see a generation of young people that are going to be that are growing up to be more aware, mm-hmm. and to be to understand what is appropriate. That, you know, from how you interact, whether it be in school, whether you how you interact in a professional setting, on college campuses, before you get to the no means no, there are going to be conversations.
Yeah.
And I think that this is a difficult and painful education for a lot of people who have come through the men behaving horribly situation. But those that come behind them, I think, are going to do well. Another important lesson I think that we will begin to see also has to do with what we call living while black. That was a really big story this year.
You do get in trouble if you are a white person who puts on black face for Halloween, or a black person who puts on white face for Halloween. Like, back when I was a kid, that was okay as long as you were dressing up as like a character.
Yeah, I wonder what that community was like. Megyn Kelly fired from...
You do get in trouble if you are a white person who puts on black...
Fired from NBC News after making that comment about blackface, but that wasn't the biggest issue. We had the Starbucks arrest of two young black men waiting in Starbucks for a business meeting. We've had our barbecue Becky's in LA, the Airbnb situation where you know renting an Airbnb while black, a real estate investor in Memphis looking at his property and having somebody call the police on him, a black guy babysitting two white kids and someone called the police because they just knew that he was going to drive them off and cook them and eat them and the whole bit. Justin, speaking for all white people in America right now.
Poor Justin.
No pressure.
What? Why don't you like us?
Okay.
what's going on?
Next question?
Right.
No, I'm just... Okay, so...
Racism for 500.
To well, Justice's defense, I'll say it's not all white people.
Double jeopardy.
Anyways, no, I mean... And you also, your list, you missed Corner Store Caroline and you missed Atlanta and everything. You know, the woman there who called the guy who was trying to go home. But I think what this really says is that, you know, things are changing in terms of technology. A lot of times in the past, we wouldn't have seen these issues become the major issues that they were had they not been caught on video. Now we're all walking around with cameras in our pocket. We're able to get these, you know, ugly moments in modern American life and put those who carry it out on full blast. And that's a big deal. That's something that, you know, hopefully is changing things, hopefully doing more than just fueling online outrage, and hopefully giving people a reason to think twice about their actions.
And, you know, that was a candlelight vigil last Friday night in Annapolis, where people remember the legacy of the last official lynching in Annapolis of Henry Davis. And there were whites and blacks, young people, part of the whole equal justice campaign in Montgomery, where they're giving a monument to people who were lynched. And you saw whites and blacks, the mayor of Annapolis, county executive from Anne Arundel County. People do have this course of humanity, of racial unity. So again, we see corporately, things are changing. Yes, it's bad, but I think, again, we had a guy in New York today, I think. Some guy goes in, now they want the white guy evicted because he was raising questions about it. So we have this generational divide, but I do have hope, you know.
Yeah, I mean, things are definitely changing. I'm still waiting for my post-Obama, post-racial America that they said was going to occur when President Obama got elected president.
And 40 acres and a mule.
And my 40 acres and a mule, exactly.
Let's talk a little bit about some local issues. And, you know, first of all, as of today, in the District of Columbia, there are 158 recorded homicides for 2018. 2017, there were 113 homicides. We're talking about a 40% increase. That includes, and I think this is truly symbolic of what happened in D.C. this year, the horrific murder of Makiya Wilson, killed this summer during a dispute between rival gangs. 10 years old, completely innocent, running to an ice cream truck. There have been so many murders in the district, and certainly we aren't at the level of Dodge City back in the 1980s, but we are still seeing a rise. The mayor and police chief Peter Newsom say that it is the availability of firearms on the street. There has to be more than that.
I really think there's one person. I was actually on Division Avenue when all that happened early in the day. You have so many young people who just out there and doing nothing, and people just are scared to talk to the young people. I see this. And so, again, until we get our hands just get out there and ask them why, and they will tell you, you know, marijuana is legal, and all this stuff. We can do what we want to do. No, but you can't drive high. You can't do these things. And this whole Fortnite mentality, I want to pick on a game where young people, you know, I have to stop my own child sometimes because guns and the training of guns is coming through video games. So, again, how do we engage young people and not make shooting so attractive? The attitude and devaluing life. And again, you can't preach your way out of this. People don't go to church anymore. You can't talk your way. The school teachers are scared. I don't know what the answer is, but it definitely needs to be an answer.
Justin.
I mean, it's just interesting. I've only been in D.C. for about 10 years, and the amount of change that we've seen across the city is really pretty staggering. You know, when I first got here, you couldn't go to Trinidad. That was something that they warned everybody about. And fast forward a couple of years, a lot of my friends are now buying, you know, houses there and whatnot. So there's been a lot of, you know, weird changes, but this is continues to be an issue.
Yeah. I think, you know, you said Fortnite. I would argue Game of Thrones. I say that in all seriousness because, you know, now there just seems to be a continuing sense of warfare on the streets of D.C. between young people with guns. And if one person feels disrespected, you have gang-related violence, but then the situation a couple of weeks ago on Benning Road was not gang-related. Right. It was over a girl, a young, very young woman, a feeling if you are disrespected, there is no calling into account that kind of thing. Why did you say what you said? Was it a misunderstanding? Did I mishear? Because I heard it five
people ago.
Yeah, I mean, this, I think, also goes back to the numbing that we were talking about earlier with the use of guns in our society, you know, where people think it's okay, like, this is how you deal with your grievances and deal with your anger and deal with your frustration. And so, once again, we still don't have elected officials willing to take the hard, fast steps to try to remove as many guns out here in the market as possible. And then, two, also the lack of, I mean, two things. One, also the teaching of people how to deal with their anger, how to deal with their frustrations, how to deal with their emotions. And also, I think also there's a sense of a hopelessness, too, amongst a lot of young folks, you know, that are growing up here in the city, you know, hopelessness about the future of this country. When you look on TV and you have a president that does whatever in the world he wants to do, and you see that, you know, the petty, you know, Patty with her cell phone calling every person, that black person she sees coming out of a store, you're like, as a young African American, you're like, well, where is my future? Where is my hope? And so, you know, the value of life is just not there.
Let's talk a little bit about some local politics. This was the beginning of a new era of politics in Prince George's County this year.
Mayor Bowser, I love you like a sister. And I'm grateful for your friendship and proud of your vision and your leadership and proud of your devotion to all 8 wards. We are sisters raised here to be recklessly proud of our hometown. So I know you won't mind me saying it, but Prince Georgians, write this down. We are not Ward 9.
Angela Alsop Brooks, first woman, first black woman, second youngest person ever to be elected to the office of county executive in Prince George's County. A lot of people hanging their hopes on the next era of prosperity for Prince George's County. Can she do it, Hamil?
I think she can. I've known her since she was a young prosecutor, and we worked on a case together, and I was a student. But what amazes me, we talk about this political sisterhood. Here's a young woman. She's focused. She's ready to go. You know, she's a mom herself. And to me, I have hope because I know she's going to be sincere. I believe she's not going to be a part of the good old boy network. She's not. Muriel Bowser's not the good old boy. So, again, the question is, where are the young fellas? You know, again, it's time for all of us to step up, but I'm encouraged by what I see in this studio tonight. You know, I believe that there's a bright future for the sisters, and we need the brothers to step up as well.
Justin.
I yield my time to the vice chair.
Well, as you know, yes, I'm from Prince George's County. Live in Prince George's County now, and I'm super excited about the future of the county. Excited to see what Ms. Alsop Brooks is going to do as our new county executive. It definitely is a new energy that she brings to Upper Marlboro. And then on the flip side, right across the street, you have Ms. Aisha Braveboy, our new state's attorney. You know, both of these young women are under the age of 45, I believe, or roughly around 45. And so, you know, it's gonna be interesting. And so I think a lot of people are really excited about the future of the county.
Well, as a person who was raised in Prince George's County, I think we can only look up. So
from everywhere.
I know. Prince George's, Baltimore.
That's right.
Well, who are you?
That's right. I'm a geographical renaissance man. Let us move on to some of the top sports stories.
Don't become the best basketball player on the planet. Be bigger than basketball. Believe in something, even if it means sacrificing everything.
Colin Kaepernick and the Nike commercial, looks like he has sacrificed a great deal, but has also gained quite a bit as well, has learned a lot as he became the new face of the sportswear company, the Just Do It campaign back in September, even though he has not been on the gridiron in more than a year. maybe
but
2 years.
I still worry years, about that so. Because, yes, he's going to be fine. But, again, for the right to free speech, you almost get, you know, blackballed or shut out of the NFL. We see what happened to DJ Swearinger with the Redskins. You know, he was terminated from his job for speaking up about a coach. It seems that there's a new attitude of zero tolerance in the sports world that we're not really talking about.
But don't forget, DJ Swearingen didn't just make one comment. His mouth's been flapping all year.
So is that, does that mean he's just fire him? Is that what they do now?
I think there's a way to do it.
Is that the best way?
I couldn't tell you. But I think there is a way. I think there's a way to do it. And as we have seen with the NFL, some things are tolerated, some things not so much, including allegations of domestic violence.
Yes, this is very interesting. See, DJ is fine. I mean, he got picked up by the car and knows he'll still get a paycheck.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Sports expert. That's right.
But on the flip side of it, you talk about, let's stay on the Redskins for a second. They pick up a player who is a couple days before they picked him up was arrested for domestic violence. He's, I guess, temporarily suspended from playing. But why would you hang your hat on someone who has this track record? It's like, okay, I can't talk about black men getting shot in the streets, but I can go ahead and beat up on my girlfriend. Like, that's relatively okay.
Yeah, I think the NFL also still has some growing to do. And I think it's going to take another financial hit and some other kinds of activism to really move them forward. I only have about a minute or so left, but we need to talk about those that we've lost this year. Some of the more significant ones, Arizona Senator John McCain, of course, George H.W. Bush, and of course, we cannot forget.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T, find out what it means to me.
We lost Aretha Franklin this year, and she was just one of those icons that you just never expected to leave us. And I think that we will never see her like again.
Again, a little respect. I remember the dedication of the Martin Luther King Memorial when she sung "Precious Lord, Take My Hand." But before she, and President Obama and Vice President Biden was there, and before she did it, she said, "Good morning, Dr. Lowry." She reached back to the civil rights generation. She went out as a queen. She brought a 6-hour funeral.
I think it was longer than 6 hours.
More like 10 hours and a couple of days. Yes.
But again.
But she deserved it.
She deserved it.
Yeah, there you go. I want to thank you all, Hamil Harris and Nicole Williams and Justin Duckham, for coming in and chatting with us about 2018. I can only imagine what 2019 will be like. Man.
It's going to be eventful.
Yeah, boy, I tell you, you need to get your jogging shoes on for that one. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Thursday, December 27th. I'm Harold Fisher. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.